Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
So there was a mishap at our last D&D session.
Yeah, we didn't get too far.
Putting it lightly.
We just started the dungeon that Kevin had arranged for us that evening.
After finishing our succulent meal from Sheets.
Yeah.
It was so good.
We got food from Sheets. Everyone's getting ready. We're into the dungeon. I'm DMing this one, and we're going to talk a bit about this campaign. But while we're playing, often, upstairs at our host's home, we will hear like a thud and then somebody yelling at the dog.
Yeah, the dog's gonna get into no good. Yeah. The dog, typical dog stuff.
Occasional, like, drop a glass or something, you know, and it's just like...
The butts are rambunctious.
But it's like you hear, like, occasionally it's like you hear shattering, and then it's just like, there's nothing happening, and then it's, okay, they swept up, everything's fine.
And then this last week, we are starting the game, and we hear, I would say, two crashes, one right after the other.
We hear a large thud, and then a glass breaking. Mm-hmm. And we kind of hold our breaths like, oh.
We all look,
It was probably one of the dogs.
You give it the moment.
You give it a moment. And then we gave it the moment, and there was a blood-curdling scream from one of the she-folk upstairs that was still haunts me to this day.
Yeah.
And because all of us go white.
She is screaming also. She's not just like, ah! She's screaming, and she's trying to say words, and the words that come clear are blood and he's not breathing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stuff you don't want to fucking hear.
Yeah.
So half of our unit immediately rushes upstairs. Thankfully, I had the foresight to understand too many cooks spoils the broth.
Yeah.
So I hung back, and I just prepared to move shit out of the way when the ambulance inevitably shows up.
We went upstairs, and...
I just kind of like... After the scream, I was like literally finishing washing my hands because I ate my disgusting, delicious burger.
Yeah.
But after that scream, like I just started sprinting up the stairs. I was just like, I don't know what I'm gonna do, but
I mean, most of us who I've talked to about this don't quite remember how it went down.
Yeah.
I just remember locking eyes with Justin and both of us having this realization: we don't need to go up there right now. Three other people went up there.
Yeah.
So, a family member of our host.
Yeah, our host's father has fallen down
on his face.
In like a Family Guy pose.
Apparently there was so much blood.
It was a literal puddle.
He had a pool of blood around his head.
Yeah.
He was unconscious and not breathing.
Brutal.
So
D&D night went south pretty quick.
Yeah, it was pretty hectic.
We didn't get back to that dungeon.
No, but we did not.
It's okay. We walked through it. We had 911 on the phone. And
thankfully, our boy Will knew CPR.
Yeah, he's doing chest compressions. Yeah.
Me and Will, we flipped him over. I don't know CPR. Will was in the military. He's had like some experience in training with that. Like, so he starts doing compressions.
Yeah.
But he's not, you know, chill either in this situation. And then I'm...
If you can believe it, we're all pretty amped.
Yeah, and then I'm doing the, can you hear me, can you hear me? Like, squeeze my hand if you can hear me. Like, hey, you know, just trying to explain to the very confused man he's on the floor.
Before he regained consciousness, he did start breathing again. And unfortunately, he was doing the worst kind of breathing that you can do. Yeah. In a medical situation, which I would call gurgling.
Yeah, I heard the gurgles and I thought, oh no.
Yeah.
This isn't a good
one. Oh no.
This is a bad one.
It was pretty intense, but
Will
did it and he kept squeezing my hand, so we knew it was working.
We flipped him. We got everything going.
Emergency folk showed up, took over.
It was quite a night.
Yeah.
And he's fine now.
Yes.
In fact, he was angry they were trying to take him out of his home.
Yeah. He was like cracking
It was very
jokes.
Funny.
Yeah, it was very pretty. He's like, why am I going again?
It was very reassuring he was like annoyed.
Yeah. He kept telling them, just tell me where to go. I'll drive myself.
Yeah. With...
Keep in mind, he has fallen down stairs onto a marble floor. The hardest, most unforgiving floor you can imagine. And on what he has fallen is the glass he held in his hand.
Oh,
there is broken glass and marble beneath him, and he smashed into that.
And it, yeah, literally the bones in his face broke. If I understand correctly. Yeah, he had a surgery for that shit. Yeah. Like, it was... Yeah.
Fucking
But
Christ.
He's good now.
He's fine, though. He's good
now.
It's worked out.
Crisis avoided. But definitely a very interesting way to end D&D night.
But we didn't get to finish the session.
I know.
Obviously.
I'm gonna bitch right at him.
You did this!
Falling down the stairs. We were just getting into it.
And with that, welcome back to Scryer's Room. I am your host, Namfair.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mario.
And if you enjoy the nature of this content, go and give us a like and subscribe on YouTube. You can go and give me a follow on Blue Sky, and you can support us on our Patreon. Today, we're going to talk about our new D&D campaign that Kevin is DMing.
That's right. I DM'd a previous campaign in the setting that I made up.
Amelin?
Amelin is the name of the town that it's all okay. in. Yeah. And in that campaign, it was everybody was in like the frontier, and they're joining the Adventurers Guild and doing all these little quests. And this one, at the end of that one, essentially, they used time travel to fix the past so that evil clown god wouldn't take over the world eventually. So this campaign takes place in that new fixed timeline.
Very fun.
And the other one was just like, oh, you guys join the Adventurers Guild, and then I just figured it out as I went along. The bad guys changed a couple of times. But who was supposed to be the final boss of that campaign, who ended up just being sort of a mini-boss late in the game, was an evil wizard that I called Bowerzog.
I love Bowerzog.
Bowerzog, he speaks like if General Grievous was just kind of a loser.
Accurate. Accurate. I never put two and two together.
And I love him. I love him so much. And this campaign is the minions of Bowerzog. See, everyone wants to join Evil Wizard's army because he's the most powerful evil wizard. He can give you money, fame, influence, power, all the things. You just have to try to join him. And the premise of the campaign is there. He puts on a big test to see if you're worthy of becoming his minion. And everybody has conglomerated in this city with a bunch of other people that are trying to also become his minions. And you have to like do his bidding. And then when you succeed, you will become a minion of Bowerzog.
It's super fun because we first encountered one of his underlings, Doyle the Droll, who was a very extra man.
I love Doyle.
And he did the introductions for our party and kind of gathered us together into a party. And the task that Doyle gave us is that each of us has to acquire a deed that has to be completed. And every member of our party has to have one of these completed deeds with them and then present them to the sorting hat, basically, to be accepted into Bowerzog's legions. But each group is only given one deed.
Yeah.
So we have to fight or outfox the other parties and take their deeds, either completed or complete them ourselves, and then present them all together to be able to join as a group to Bowerzog's legions.
Yeah, it's like, we don't have to kill them, but most of us are cool with it in the party. So
yeah, this is
it's only really much one person who like doesn't really want to do that.
If you haven't noticed, this is very much an evil campaign. We don't play a lot of evil campaigns. Some of our characters might end up being evil in a campaign, but we don't play any that are like flavored as, oh, you guys are just evil.
And this one pretty much is.
Yeah, this one is flavored as you are just, we are serving the evil wizard Bowerzog. We want to be his minions. So it's time to fuck shit up and take names.
So one of my favorite things, this is one of the things that almost killed me. I have a terrible time DMing because I think of clever little ideas that I really like, and whether or not everyone else likes it is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
They typically will, and I want them to like it, but really, I really like it. And one of the ones that I really enjoyed, so in the previous campaign, they had to form a group at the Adventurers Guild, and they had to give it a name. But nobody had any ideas for names, so they used a generator, like an online name generator type thing.
Yeah.
And the name for their party that they came up with was that they would be the Vulgar Alliance.
I love it.
And they got really into it. They Justin like designed like a like what's it? Not a shield.
Like a crest?
Yeah, like a crest for the Vulgar Alliance.
Like a little, like a gilded V and an A.
Yeah, and like the a gang sign for it.
Yeah, we kept throwing up VA gang signs.
Yeah, it was so much fun. But the Vulgar Alliance doesn't exist in this timeline. Instead, like, part of fixing the previous timeline was there were only four heroes in the original past, and then fixing the timeline, one of their characters, Justin's character, Xander, he went back in time and he joined the Heroes Party, so now there were five members. And so, like, in this version of this universe, the five-man group is, like, a sacred number, and it's very, like, well-respected, and everyone knows, like, if you form a group, five is, like, a really solid number, like the Heroes Party. And Doyle, as he was, like, telling them, like, how to become groups and become minions of Balrog. I'm going to do his voice. I can't.
You have to.
He told them that each of you must form a group of five so that you may profane the Heroes Party. And when you form a group of five who will work together, you will bind with each other in a vulgar alliance.
And we were like, well, he said the thing. He said the thing. We started losing our minds.
Yeah. For like 4 weeks during like the pre-planning process of this, I am just shaking, trying not to
spoil it. Kevin loves spoiling. If you haven't noticed on this podcast, Kevin loves spoiling.
I love spoiling. I can't help it. I have such. I said it before. I think at a insult to you, the strength of my weakness. It's so powerful.
I love it. But yeah, so our cast of characters, I guess we're going to go with, we had mentioned previously that there's like a scale of like serious to cartoon of our characters. So we're going to start on the serious end here. Will, you'll remember him from a previous episode of the podcast. He was a guest before when we were talking about From Software. He is playing probably the most serious branded character, Maltharion.
Yes.
Who is a bit of an edgelord. I think this is Will's first like edgelord character, at least that I've encountered in D&D. Typically he plays like you know,
he's
solid characters, but like this character is like
he like put a lot of effort into it. Like, he made like a whole backstory for
him. Yeah, and I'm not being disparaging.
No,
I just mean literally he's like when you think of like an evil paladin kind of character, like a blackguard almost. Like that's verbatim his character.
Yeah.
And his goal is like power. Like, you know, like
get fucking shit up.
His character's backstory is power so that if he's betrayed again, he like can handle himself and not just like fall victim to like the world that has like turned its back on him, which is classic stuff.
Yeah.
His backstory is essentially he worked on a boat with his friend Warwick, and Warwick, because he knew like they were transporting like a super powerful magical artifact, something really valuable. He was like just trying to like implant the idea in Maltharion's mind, like if you're strong enough to take something, it's right and good if you take it, because you're the right, you're the strongest, therefore you're right. It's up to you. And then Warwick took that shit and like framed Maltharion for stealing the artifact. And because, Tony, you're playing a bard.
Yeah.
Genuinely, one of the songs that, like, Roberta knows is, like, Warwick the Innocent.
Yeah.
That's
good. It was, like, the something Warwick.
Yeah.
I have it in my notes.
It's wonderful.
Which, should I write that up at one point, or is
I would love for you to do that.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll make up something. Give me the spark notes as to what the actual instance was. Because
then you can embellish from there, yeah.
Yeah, and then I'll use the troll will. That'll be good.
And then Justin's pretty serious too.
He's straightforward character.
He's pretty serious.
Yeah.
He's playing him like he's like naive.
Yeah.
Or like about certain things.
His character's Flora Wizard.
He's a wizard, I think Eladrin.
Yes.
Who essentially lives, the Eladrin in this setting live in like a little pocket of where the Feywild bleeds into reality. So like they're sort of cut off from everybody else unless they want to go out. So his character's a little bit more naive than everybody else. He doesn't have like the same kind of worldliness. And he wants to play a good character, I believe. Like this is a guy who by the end of this campaign it'll be certain that he's probably a good guy.
Yeah, he's not as willing to fuck shit up as the rest of us.
He wants to join Balrog for information about bad guys that he does not care for.
Okay.
A pretty like similar story of an artifact was stolen, and now there's like a group of radicalized dudes in his homeland who are pissed off about that stolen artifact, and he wants that artifact, and he wants to do good. But, you know, because he's like less serious, part of his deal is like, you know, he in literally the last session, like while he needed to distract people, he just was going around like rejuvenating like the ornamental grass and stuff around this dwarf city and throwing bouquets.
Yeah, I guess handing out bouquets of flowers to people because you can just grow them. Yay! Like, oh, look at that guy. Look at the elf go.
And then we have the midpoint of our silliness.
Which is Rob's character, whose full name is Hears the Voice of All Things. He is a monk. He is a halfling monk.
And he goes by Harry.
I love that so much. Like, and the way he, like, played it, like, it gave me the impression that he hates his fucking name. He doesn't like being called Here's the Voice of All Things. Just please, please just call me Harry.
Yeah. But he's essentially a homeless, or, a, like, maybe by choice, but, like, maybe not. But he was, like, raised by monks to survive.
Yeah.
And he's willing to do, like, anything for money, so, like, greed will, like, influence a lot of his actions. But he's also kind of silly in, like, all of his ways. I mean, Rob's playing him, so it's going to happen.
Harry's basically just from, like, Always Sunny.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, what if Frank was a monk?
I was going to say, like, what if Frank was a monk? Yeah, that's basically Harry.
He likes scheming, he likes doing little traps and tricks.
But he's not a bad guy.
Yeah.
He's just, you know, kind of skeevy.
So he'll take advantage of the situation, but it's like, you know.
Like, there was another guy that they found who had a deed, but he was dying. He was bleeding out. And then, like, once he, like, and seemingly died, Harry was like, all right, we take the deed. But then, like, just in case, he just reaches over and grabs his chin and just real quick jerk and...
Okay. Yeah, finish the deal.
Making sure.
Just definite.
Yeah. No ambiguity here.
Which leads us to the silly
half. Now the scales have tipped.
The silly half, coincidentally, is populated by these two right here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I have rehashed probably my favorite character, Roberta Lapunny.
So an interesting thing that I've been able to do in this campaign, because it is a timeline thing where, like, time travel changed, so this universe is different, I get to basically populate this campaign with a lot of, like, Easter eggs of the last campaign and some of the same characters who are now in different situations. Time travel changed them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the first campaign, Roberta and Bruce Leroy and Bastion Tassard were an adventuring group who were in town for the festival that was going on because the super famous adventurers came back from a successful, like, mission.
And those are characters that he cameoed for a campaign that Brody, the DM,
from Curse of Strahd, exactly. Because at the end of Curse of Strahd, basically those three went off to continue adventuring and doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it'd be fun to, like, put them as an Easter egg. Which means they exist in this timeline, which means in this new timeline they also exist. And so Roberta in this timeline, Tony is playing again.
And her motivation... So in the original iteration of Roberta, the character was chaotic neutral.
Yeah.
She was very self-centered. Her motivation, it was actually her flaw, was she would do anything to become famous.
Yeah.
And her motivation was to be the most famous singer-dancer in the land. Which is an interesting place to start that adventure in Barovia, but, you know.
Where there is no joy to be had.
Roberta's dump stat was intellect, and I played her accordingly.
Yeah.
This current iteration of Roberta actually has 4 more intellect. Haha, so I get to be smart this time, at least a little bit. I don't have to be completely airheaded. But Roberta, this time, is just evil. Yeah. I did not make any...
I mean, by the end of the first campaign, she was
aging. Yeah, I should have mentioned that.
Soul.
Yeah, I sold my soul to have a fatter ass. But my charisma was 24, so I'll have you know.
It was,
pretty
good.
Pretty fat ass. But yeah, I was totally evil by the end of the campaign. I remember specifically there's an artifact that we were, like, looking for, like, the Dawnblade or whatever.
Yeah, and you have to pass through, like, a door that only good-aligned characters can pass
through. And my ass was like, well, I can walk through the fucking door. And then, pop, no. Like, what do you mean I'm evil?
You sold your soul to the... But you also sold your soul to the devil, like, 4 hours before that.
I really did. It was, like, immediately before that.
It happened, like, in such quick thing, and you were like, what? How could this be?
What do you mean?
So in this campaign, what's her backstory?
So in this campaign, Roberta's backstory is that, once again, she wants to be the most famous singer-dancer in all the land. And she has delusions of grandeur. So the rabbit people in Kevin's setting are do not have like a royalty. They're very much kind of like gypsy-esque, like yeah. nomad wanderers. They don't have a land of their own. Roberta is convinced that she is actually the secret hidden royalty of the rabbit people, don't you know, and that all of them should actually serve her. There is no basis or reason or proof behind this besides her own "I said so."
Yeah, this is very much just her projecting, because in my head, so part of this setting that I have is I want anybody to be able to play anything, so a lot of the world isn't totally fleshed out, so I can add things to it. And one of the things that I added to it so that everybody could play, like, I mean, two people come from, like, species that are, like, Feywild species. Mm-hmm. So I have the bleeds, where those, like, planes sort of bleed over. And the rabbits just, they move between the bleeds to the Feywild. They just, you know, travel like nomads between them. But also, nomads are normally pretty good about keeping their history. If they weren't, they'd keep, like, falling into the same area where, like, oh, they kill all of us when we go over
Yeah,
there.
They're pretty good at recording where we're and they're not allowed.
So they definitely know they don't have a princess.
Yeah, yeah. Every one of the rabbit peoples is extremely aware and cognizant that there is no royal line. We don't do that here.
Yeah.
Not Roberta. Roberta's actually a princess, don't you know? And if you disagree, you're a bad man. We need to beat you up. And so Roberta's motivation in joining the minions of Barazog is to have a backer in her claim of being the queen of the rabbit people, and intends to violently subjugate all the rabbits who disagree with her.
You know, because she's still good.
It's going to be quite the ride. We'll see how it goes. Just the cute pink rabbit in a beret, dancing and singing and subjugating.
Which brings us to the far end of the scale.
Yeah, if you thought that wasn't cartoony enough, if you thought that wasn't silly enough, no, there is a way to go even farther beyond.
There is. Mario.
I've stated it before. I come up with a dumb theme, and then I roll with it.
I love it.
It's so good.
And the last campaign we played with Brody, I just randomly decided to play a GIF, which is the hippo space people.
Yes.
Who are inexplicably experts with guns and
explosives. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. And why are hippos good with guns?
And sail the phlogiston, which is the gas in between the crystal, or it's a whole thing.
Yeah, a space hippo.
And then I just really ended up liking GIF, because they're just fucking weird. And
they really are.
They really are.
But then I was like, okay, I already did gunman, ranger build. I haven't done a rogue in a long time. Let me make like an assassin. I kind of just made him like on the spot almost. And yeah. Then I was like, what would be a dumb, weird thing to do? And I was like, can I be a Dampier, but a GIF Dampier? And Kevin was like, sure.
Yeah.
Why not? God bless. So he's a half vampire, which is basically what a Dampier is, GIF. And the joke is that he's a reverse hippo. So instead of having like super stubby legs and like a giant like you know stout body, he's instead got like a very thin like wiry torso and like really, really creepy long like yeah. Slender Man.
He's yeah. the ghoul. Limbs. He's a ghoul of a hippo man.
He's a Slender Man with like a you imagine like a pygmy hippo head, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He has the Mudang face.
Yeah. I never imagined Mudang, yeah. But now I do.
Yeah, it's very, instead of like, because he's a reverse hippo, he doesn't have the huge snout, it's smashed in like a pug.
Oh, no.
Have you ever seen Mudang with its mouth open, any of the pygmy hippos?
Yeah.
They're still terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, they'll fuck you up with those teeth.
And so, where does Hippley come from? Also, his name is Hippley Swipes,
yep.
Which is a dumb pun I made up also in like 5 minutes.
Pun might be generous.
Because Wesley Snipes played...
Half vampire.
Played Blade. Yeah. And I was like, what's a dumb fucking name? And Hippley Swipes because he dual wields daggers and throws them.
Yeah.
That's his whole thing. That's he's a soul knife rogue. And Hippley doesn't know where he comes from.
Yeah.
He just woke up in the under city, basically, beneath the capital. Yeah. Of the setting, and that was just from the moment he was like able to form memories, that's just where he was, and he was just Gollum down there for a while until he, you know, he just went to the surface and he started learning and like watching, you know, people, and then he also inexplicably has memories of another hippo man. And he has no idea why the fuck that is, and it's my other character, Dick Dixon.
Yeah,
there's a whole reason for that. It's a secret origin story. I mean, I worked it out with Kevin.
Oh, okay, hell yeah. Yeah, don't tell me. Yeah, I like this.
Yeah, yeah, it's supposed to be a whole thing down the line. But Hipley has these weird fucking memories of Dick Dixon, who also the joke with him was that he was a 1930s detective hippo man.
Yeah.
So like noir. So he has no idea why he has that, but he just taught himself how to do everything basically, and then he just became a knife for hire. And he doesn't actually really care about money or anything like that. He instead fell in love with candy.
That's right. Yes.
He likes sweets.
Technically, he became a hedonist assassin.
Yeah.
Where the joy that he gets out of it is like all that can be valuable.
He grew up in the sewer eating like slime and bugs.
I would say probably my favorite part about Hipley being a dampier, and I would say probably my favorite part about dampiers, is the climb speed.
Oh yeah. My goodness.
The fact that
you just automatically get a climb speed.
I love so much that he has a climb speed because Mario has taken that fact and ran with it because so Hipley is constantly just ghouling around on the wall and the ceiling, just cackling madly as he just
just one more level, I get free spider climb.
It's so good.
I don't have to use my hands anymore.
So if you just imagine a man with a slender man with Mooding's face ghouling around on the wall, and throwing soul knives at people.
Well, I don't have access to that yet. One more level. But Hipley is chaotic evil, and I run with that as hard as I fucking can.
He does. I don't know what the fuck he's going
to
do.
I usually don't either. And I've taken it to, I will literally flip a coin to see how he reacts to a situation.
Yes.
And ask someone else to call it. That's been really fun.
Ironically, he's only done good deeds so
far. So also importantly, Hipley's motivated. He understands money as what it is and why it's valuable, but he personally doesn't. He's not motivated by that.
Yeah,
he's actually pretty content as an individual. Weirdly,
he can provide for himself.
Yeah, his encounter with Doyle the Droll, he just immediately threw a knife at him in the dreamscape.
Yeah,
because he was like, "You let me have these. So what happens if I do this?"
And now he has an evil knife that has goo from his dreams on it. Yeah. What could it be?
And because I can't not do a dumb voice, he talks like Richard Nixon.
Yes.
It's so good.
Why wouldn't he?
It's so good.
Hipley Swipes.
I'm Hipley Swipes. Friend to all children.
He's friend to all children.
And Hipley likes kids. He does not harm children.
Yeah. So far,
it's been plot relevant.
Yeah, so far it's been very helpful to the group. I mean,
it has.
He also is the only person to have taken or saved a life so far. The first thing that happened, they had a little half combat on the very first session. That wasn't really combat. It didn't really matter, and I knew it wouldn't. Essentially, I brought in some guys who they didn't care for from the last timeline.
Another cameo.
And I wanted them to just be able to kill them and get them out of the way. And they did. They got them. And that was the first thing that has happened. However, also, there was a child drowning in the river that the guards didn't hear or see. Hipley just plucked him right out.
Because he's a gif. I also get a swim speed.
So he has a climb speed, a swim speed. He can go anywhere.
Yeah.
No one is safe from Hipley Swipes.
That's how he's been able to survive so long.
So he just dove right in the river and was like, all right, I'll meet you guys over there. And then there's just a drowning kid. He's like, oh, here.
There you go.
And he gave him a piece of candy. He's like, stay away from the river, idiot.
And then not only did he give her a piece of candy, he also gave her a knife.
Oh, no. That's a
separate
child. Oh, okay. I was going to say.
That's a mafia boss's.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought it was the same one. Okay.
Because that's one of Hipley's ways of getting information, is he finds groups of children, which is, any other character, this would be extremely weird and creepy, and probably he's going to kill them. But Hipley, no, he generally means no harm to the children. But he just throws candy at them, and then any of them brave enough to come talk to him, he asks them to tell him something. And that's how we found the dude dying in the alley, was because the little girl told him.
I imagine the scene from It where he Pennywise is in is in the sewer.
Yeah!
But it's just a Mudang face Slenderman, and he's just throwing gumdrops out of the fucking sewer.
It's candy.
And she said, yeah, that guy, there's like a dying guy and he's got a knife. And it's like, I'm waiting for him to die so I can go get that knife. And I was like, yeah. And Hippley remembered that. And so after Harry killed him, he took the knife. And then he's a knife thrower, so he's extremely accurate. And he just threw it like to her. Yeah. Like, and it just went to the ground and he tied a piece of candy to it.
Yeah, and then she tried to chase his new friends with a knife.
Yeah.
Wholesome, friendly fun.
That paid off huge down the
road. Yeah. We thought, what has Hippley done? He is, what the fuck? You can't give children knives.
Friend all children.
She was going to get the knife either way.
Apparently.
She wanted it.
She really did.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. A lot of fun making stupid things.
Yeah, it's been a good campaign so far. We just entered our first dungeon before the head trauma happened, and that was an interesting thing. One of the encounters we had was basically we have to go into this manor and like sabotage this noble house.
Yeah.
And so we were all trying to figure out ways to get in there. And so I decide, I'm the bard. I'm kind of like the face / distraction. That's what I'm good at. So I decide to impromptu a bardogram to this building.
Yes.
And I just kind of knock on the door with my cute little rabbit self, like, oh, hello, who's the birthday boy? And then Kevin roleplayed it that two of the guards are just fucking jackasses. And like, oh, yeah, it's this guy right here. Yeah. He's the fucking birthday boy.
Get him.
So I just start singing the birthday song from regular show because it's the best birthday song. And I can't do happy birthday because of copyright reasons.
Yeah.
That's one of the funniest things about the birthday song. It is like one of the most heavily protected copyrights in the world. You cannot just sing happy birthday. You will get blambasted with legal fees.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, ridiculous. So I ended up singing up the different birthday song from regular show. And yeah, I just started doing that while all the other party just crept in and like slid in. Yeah,
it was just a regular show bit. Like everyone was just like, I literally just crawled across the ceiling because I can't believe I could just do that.
Cool-ass motherfucker.
Well, it worked out really, really well. That you can just climb across the ceiling because
it solves so many issues.
It's
climb speed. It's really opened my eyes to like Dampier is definitely a very powerful option because being able to just ghoul around like that, impeccable.
It also, at least in my mind, one of the good. I'm the kind of DM who will say yes to basically anything because I want you guys to be able to play with all the toys. We have this big box of toys. And half of all gameplay is just saying, and you're not allowed to play with those ones ever.
That's a lot of DMs run their tables, yeah.
And, that can be fine and fun. Like, I mean, I've played D&D under other DMs where that is, like, more the case. And it's always still fun. But I want you guys to be able to play with the toys you want to play with. And the thing that I think will pull back on that is, one, I've been... getting some assistance on like combat design so I can actually properly challenge you guys. I've been studying under Brody's tutelage for a little while. He's pretty good at actually.
He's a meticulous dungeon master. He plans and prepares very well.
Been studying him.
And it's nice to play in his campaigns because he never hands us anything.
No.
We have to earn and eke out everything we do to the point that we've had a lot of close calls, but it's never like cruel.
Yeah.
He's never done anything.
He's not fucking
cruel
us over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just providing an actual challenge that we are skilled and intelligent enough to overcome as long as we think about it.
If anything, he just gives us enough ropes to hang ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, why did you go down the obvious Indiana Jones trap hallway?
Yeah, there's an Indiana Jones trap hallway. And then, okay, I steal
and we
the treasure.
Fell for it.
I steal
so
the treasure
easily.
And fly out faster than everybody else.
Yeah.
Okay, the ceiling's falling.
I left them all to die.
Yeah. But because I am too tricksy to kill, we survive.
Yeah, God bless, dude. Like, you always need a Kevin in your party to have his adamantium frying pan.
You know what has been, like, the most flattering thing? So, I'm not good at D&D and, like, or any real board game, strategy game, because the rules slip from my mind pretty quickly in, like, the nitty-gritty of it. I've got butt brains for that. However, I am a, Brody said, and this makes me very happy, I'm impossible to plan around because of my shenanigans. Because I like being a wild card that's very clever. It makes me feel happy. I'm not going to be good enough to beat you at playing this game. But I might be good enough at being silly and clever in a way that you're not expecting. And Brody has a couple of times now made mention of, and I had to plan this around Kevin. And every single time, that warms my heart so deeply. There's no higher praise that I could be receiving.
It's a good feeling.
It's so wonderful. And I've had to plan a little bit around you guys, but my ability to do so is limited. So I'm like, I'll just be silly at them with some of these D&D things. And so, like, we had that little baby half combat in, like, the first session. Otherwise, we haven't had a real combat yet.
No, it's not yet. It's an almost all RP.
Yeah, and I hope you guys would have fun. I've been having a great time with it.
Granted, I'm biased because a huge part of the roleplay. So one of the first things that happened...
Stabbing him in the dick.
Yeah.
That was a Hippley's introduction, by the way. He got bored of everyone talking, so he just threw a knife at the robot.
Yeah.
And then everyone's just like, what the hell is that thing? Because he's just up on the ceiling.
He's
like,
on the ghouling in the ceiling.
That became a horror movie.
Being a creep. It's being a terrifying vampire man. But one of the first things that happens is we need to figure out how to sabotage this house, Calcanis.
Yes.
And so I decide to go with Maltharion into the Adventurers Guild and to get registered to kind of like put on a front.
Adventurers.
Yeah, we're just adventurers. Yeah, we're not doing anything for Balasag or nothing. Haha. And then I forget. Was that when I pretended to be going up to Carcastus? Or did we go into a different building after that?
So when you were in the Adventurers Guild, you guys talked to a man at the bar, Voxen, who was the
Dirty Mermo.
Yeah.
My character's races against followers of Mermilithris.
Who's the god of the duel in the pit. He's very popular amongst the dwarves, but also like...
They keep throwing riot people in the pits.
Yeah, part of their religion is like cockfighting.
It's really cute to make the rabbits fight.
Yeah, and those are people.
We're people. We're people too, but they take great enjoyment in watching our bunny brains get bashed in the arena, and Roberta takes issue with this,
which is sensible.
Yeah,
and then later you guys went. There's like a huge tower, like office building in this town, which is like a record building slash a building built by a guy who was from the other campaign, and then that is when you lied. To go up into the building, because you guys wanted to go up like 10 floors on this building to look down on the manor house below.
That's why you went in, so we can get a better bird's eye view.
Yeah.
And so to be able to get access to the upper levels, I flick my ears back and I say, I actually belong here. They're expecting me. They're expecting a package. No, the guy asked, are you guys here to bring the package? And I was like, yes, I have the package. I'm the messenger. I'm important. And Maltharion just kind of rolls his eyes and is like, oh, this fucking bitch.
Yeah.
And so we just get free reign to walk upstairs, and we go up a few levels, and we're looking around, and then we get bagged.
Yeah.
We get bagged quick, and I'm making a big fuss about it. You can't do this! Do you know who I am? Unhand me! I'm royalty! I'll have your head on a platter! All ineffectual baseless threats.
Right. Baseless threats and obvious lies.
Yeah, and obvious lies. And then, we learned that the big shot up here is named Carcastus.
Yeah.
And so as I'm being bagged, I'm like, oh, well, Carcastus is going to have your head for this. Oh, I'm an important guest. You better let me go right now. And
you'll never guess who bagged them.
Yeah, and then as the bag gets removed from our head as we enter this room, a blue tiefling turns in his chair and begins... Kevin, why don't you give the introductions here?
So they are unbagged. They are like... sat in chairs forcibly by like 8 foot tall demon women in like suits of armor that are like built to look like, you know, like a business suit.
I love it.
And they're being held down at the shoulder, and he turns around. He's got like one curled horn on one side, and the other side is like a broken horn with like a gold cap on it. And he says to them, we have been connected by the gossamer threads of fate. You have knotted yourself with mine own. By your trickery and lies, you have presented yourself falsely on a mission of my own purpose. And here you are with nothing for me. You were supposed to deliver a package to me. You lied. Who are you and what are you doing?
And then I say, I didn't lie to you. I did come to deliver a package. And he kind of looks at me crossways, like, what the fuck are you on about, Rabbit? Yeah. And I say, the package was me.
And he is, he basically is like, that's stupid and I don't want you. What I'm what he is waiting for is every day his daughter who goes to play in the park with her friends. Every day she goes to the restaurant right across the street from here. It is one of the nicest restaurants in all of Anvar, the city in which we currently dwell. It is called Dubi Kuzo's. She is to bring me my lunch every day. She is given the flights of fancy, and I know quite easily distracted, and I, being a doting father, cannot possibly scold her for her misgivings and doings and forgetting this mission. However, you said that you had it for me, and you have nothing, and my blood sugar is quite low. So essentially, he basically said, you guys are going to go get my lunch, or I'll simply kill all of you.
And I'd also like to note, when I did my little bit about not lying that I'm the package, he had one of his hell wives shake me.
Yeah.
Shake me very violently.
Shake him. Shake her. Yeah.
Immediately, when Kevin started doing the voice, I was like, man, fuck off. God damn it. Yeah. But specifically, I don't know if it was that meeting or when we...
Came back, met him again.
You were just like, hell wives, take them away. And it was just like the way you said it. It was just like the fucking the interdimensional cable, like demons, kill them,
kill
like
them.
Give them shit. Like, yeah, that whole situation killed me.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed.
And that was
Carcastus.
Doran Carcastus. He's a mob boss in the area. And I should have told you guys this at the time. I sort of forgot to. He runs like brothels that essentially use lust demons and devils as like the prostitutes, and they're being paid in like corrupting your soul. So it's a very
win-win.
It's a real profitable business for him. And they had to go down to Dubi Kuzo's, and
we had to make sure that we weren't seen leaving this building. Or entering through that the front of either of these buildings.
Yes.
We had to not make it obvious. It's a secret op. No one could know. And as we leave through the back door, we encounter an unfortunate man smoking Taro. Some wizard weed.
Yeah.
And he's not having a good go of it.
Taro has had too much, and they immediately clock this. They essentially do the Eric Andre nightmare. You're high. Everyone knows.
I literally do nightmare.
Immediately just start bullying this guy. He's done nothing wrong.
Yeah,
like, he's just a guy. Like
he just tried too much weed.
His crime was just being there.
He was just high and present. And they were like, "Get his ass. Bully him, and don't stop." So. I am really struggling not to just spoiler a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, I know. Right, I can tell. I can see it. He wants it bad.
One of the other things that is occurring. So, one of the first things that happened that, like, the dead guy in the alley that they were talking about, that they got a deed off of, they were able to puzzle out, okay, there's, like, a police setup down the road down there, and also a man bleeding out in the alley here. And they pulled the deed from him, and the deed that he had was kill everyone who has read this deed. And so Harry, Rob's character, quickly rolls that back up, puts it in the pocket, and tells everybody verbally what it says, and don't be opening up deeds willy-nilly. Because one of them might say, kill everyone who's read this, and we will have to make some choices then, won't we?
Yeah.
And so they go down to the crime scene as well, and they find... the other two characters from Roberta's party. We have Bastian Tassard and Bruce Leroy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've decided to make Bastian Tassard in this sort of like a Woody Harrelson type of investigator cop man with his partner, Mr. Leroy.
I love it. It's such a good crime duo. That is such a good crime duo.
Karate Man, who is essentially just our friend Josh.
Yeah, I love it.
And then like a vaguely Southern...
6'3 dreads.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every time.
He stays on theme. He stays on theme. Love that guy. But they find like the remains of the rest of that party that had that deed. And there's only three corpses, which means counting the one in the alley, there's still that's only four. Each of these Vulgar Alliances are five people.
So we got 100 man down.
So there's they have the suspect in custody, but I do really like the idea. In my head, it's very funny that like everybody like when their groups were like brought together, like Doyle the Droll appears to them. He's one of the generals of Bowazog, and he explains that you will need to complete this deed, and everyone reads their deed, and then they all just start stabbing each other. As hard and as fast as they can. They can't give anybody enough time. But one of them was still survived and was taken into custody. And there are a couple people now that are in the jail, and I really want you guys to go to the jail sometime. There's no hurry to it. But there are a couple characters that, by things happening in the background, are going to be in the jail. I'm real excited for it.
One of the other deeds that we came across is after I got shaken by Carcassus' Hellwise, he mentioned that he was having a bad day. One of the reasons he was having a bad day was they found a gentleman he was hiding in his walls.
Yeah, just in the vents.
And they confiscated all his stuff and threw him out, and so naturally I was like, oh, let's go to the Lost and Found and steal his stuff. And so we did.
Yeah. His belongings are down at the front desk. Take whatever you want. I have no desire for his personal effects. I simply wish to strip him and throw him in the street to humiliate. And I mean, he called his dirty cops on him to arrest him too. Yeah. So
we ended up confiscating his stuff, and he had some goodies, including one of the deeds.
Yes.
And that deed was hide unobstructed for 10 days.
Unseen 10 days. Nobody can see you.
Yeah. So we'll have to figure out how to accomplish that at some point.
Which, my immediate reaction as Hippolyte was just like, I could do that standing on my head. Like, it just...
He really could.
He's so ready to just,
just ghoul into the corner somewhere and just fucking...
Yeah, he could just chill. Yeah.
Meanwhile, this group was like, okay, I'm going to hide in the vents of the mob boss's building.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Uh-huh. I think it'll go great.
I think the investigation is going really well, guys.
I have a bunch of stuff planned, and I really want to tell you guys so much about it. So part of the thing, when they were told, like, you're each given a deed, they were told that there's 30 other teams, which means I needed to think of 30 other deeds. And at the time, I had really thought about, like, 5 to 10. Because the likelihood of you guys seeing every single deed is basically zero.
Yeah.
However, this was one of the most fun, easy to fill out, like, the city and quests and things that you guys can do. Because every single deed, like, leads to, like, a story thread.
Mm-hmm.
And I could just make them all fit together. So you can do, like, any amount of them and, like, whatever. But by virtue of this quest saying you need to go there for something, means something has to be there. Which means that I can make a specific thing there that's related to this, which is also needs to be over here. Because this deed says that there's something over here. And if you guys are ever having any trouble trying to populate like a world, side quests are just the bee's knees for coming up with what must be in this place.
Yeah.
The course of this this campaign is going to be heavily, like, the city is going to change as the days go on, because there's 30 teams of dudes trying to do various evil bidding for a wizard. So it's going to, like, people are going to notice.
And I also like it. It's such a good plot hook, because by the end of us being initiated into Bowerzog's army, there's five other rival teams for us to deal with, mm-hmm. that we may or may not have either fucked over or impressed in our shenanigans.
Exactly.
Oh, something we didn't mention is the flaws.
Yes, so...
Oh, yeah.
So flaws is a concept that's been in D&D. I don't really know how it works in 5e, if it's still really a thing. But basically, it's like the opposite of a feat, if nobody knows. And... The way it used to work in like 3.5 was the flaws were just, it was dumb as hell. It was just like, you pick one and you get to take another feat. But they were like, weren't even that bad. It was like, you just pick one that doesn't affect your character at all, basically.
Yeah.
With
this one, I wanted each flaw to be kind of an anti-feat rather than just a bad thing.
Yeah, it has like real stakes. Yeah. that's like the impression you get when you read them.
And he made one just for my character because he knows how I like to roleplay. And that flaw is Delicate Flower.
Yeah.
where I basically have the opposite of the hardiness trait, or sturdiness, whatever it's called. Where
toughness, I
think. It might be toughness. I have less HP per level because of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so one of the flaws that I was going to give Roberta was going to be the curse that she got for selling her soul.
Oh, yeah.
Which was that she takes, like...
I can't take no for an answer.
Yeah, if she's told no, she takes, like, 1d4 psychic damage.
I basically get hit with Vicious Mockery, yeah.
Yeah, and if I had placed that on Roberta, along with this other flaw that is anti-toughness, Roberta would just have died by
it. Yeah, I would have been
told... And they haven't been in combat.
I would have been told no one too many times, my little heart would have just given out.
Yep. She's too delicate.
She's too delicate. Can't handle it.
And then I got Child of Night.
Yes.
Or Dark, I think. Because, obviously, I'm half vampire.
Yeah.
Which is... Doesn't have any issues. Unless I'm in the sun.
Yeah.
And then it fucking sucks. And I basically can't do anything.
In the sun, he basically has flat disadvantage on everything. And his speed is lowered. Everything is
minus two all checks.
Yeah.
And, yeah, because it's... I get like a faux point of exhaustion.
Yeah.
Which exhaustion is you get like you keep getting new more points in like the new version, and it's like with each point you just get flat like
minus two to everything. Yeah.
On every check. And on top of that, I have disadvantage.
If he's in the sun, he has disadvantage and one like faux exhaustion, and it's been pretty funny. I mean, he tried to, like, sneak around the entire, like, facility to try to get a peek at the manor that they need to infiltrate. And, essentially, people just saw him.
it's like, as soon as he hits the sunlight, it's just like, ah! It's like army crawling. Like,
yeah.
Guys, I'm not doing too
good. My solution was to get him a parasol. Which, would that actually work?
You don't know yet.
And we don't know, huh? Well, that's better than no.
That is better than no. Normally, I will say no if something's no, so you never know. Although, I do say something that Rob hates so much.
Who can say?
Who can say? Rob got sort of invested in some of the plot details in the last campaign.
Yeah, he was really into it.
And he would like be like, oh, this must be from this. And he would say it to me, and being the DM... In my heart, I want to tell him the truth because I want to tell him the funny story idea that I had. But as a DM, you have to be...
Cagey.
Maybe.
And what I would say is, who can say? And then now every time that somebody asks me a question that I don't like immediately confirm or deny, Rob will just yell at me, well, who can say?
It's good. It's real good. I need to start a... practicing ad-libs for my spells. Part of why I like playing a bard. I'm kind of a pretentious asshole when it comes to bard. I think to truly play a bard, you need to be able to sing and limerick. If you will not sing and limerick, then you're not really a bard.
You should be able to engage in the kind of art that your bard does.
Fair enough. Yes. I will revise my stance to that. You're part of being a bard is you are a flavor of artist. And if your character should express that in some way. If that's
conceivably, you could be a stripper. That's kind of what she was in the last campaign too.
A little bit, yeah, dancer.
She was a dancer.
Yeah, I did exotic dances, like a little bell dance.
But like coming up with like, oh, she does a bell dance that's about this thing is pretty similar to like, okay, if your character's always singing in limerick, then you should come up with a couple of those.
Yeah,
I agree. For like role playing purposes, you should get into your character as much as you friggin' can.
Yeah. And Bard is like one of those ones that's like designed to be extra.
Yeah, well, so being Hippoly has been fun.
You have been excellent about staying in character. I've really enjoyed it.
So I was like, I weirdly put a lot of thought into like how he rationalizes things or like with the way he processes stuff. And it comes down to he's sort of like an evil Bugs Bunny.
Yeah,
like
that's really accurate.
So like he's a very like silly person, but he's very functional too. Like he's very good at what he does.
Yeah,
he's extremely stealthy, and then like the knife throwing thing is I've done some stuff, but like he's not like particularly malicious or like he doesn't just kill people for like no reason, you know, that sort of thing. Or
yeah.
And like the Bugs Bunny thing is that like Bugs Bunny has to be provoked.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the start of all the Bugs Bunny episodes. It's like the Elmer Fudd or whoever did something to him.
Yeah, they're trying to kill him. Or...
And now he's punishing you. And that's sort of like the way Hipley views it, is just like, until you have like done wrong, or like the people he's around have designated you as like, oh, we're killing them? Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Like, but until then, it's just like, whatever. Like, he doesn't really care. And children are off limits.
I think we're almost wrapping up here. I do want to bring up one other thing. Not about our D&D, but we have a new campaign coming up with Brody that's going to be a 40K one.
Oh, baby, yeah. We're doing Imperium Maledictum. We're doing another round of that. If you haven't seen it, I've been posting our episodes of the previous campaign. So go ahead and check those out on our YouTube channel.
And now we have to think of funny voices and funny characters for the next one.
Oh, man.
I'm not going to do the French accent again. Ratko's definitely still, like, around and kicking, if it's up to me.
Yeah.
You know? Warhammer is a heady style of setting where, like, oh, no, he was killed in an industrial accident off screen. And, frankly, that can be said about almost any guy who isn't the Emperor.
Even the Space Marines.
Yeah.
The crane just fell right on top of him.
It was awful.
I don't know if I can top Truliman.
Truliman was great.
Oh, man, what a great...
Well, because... It hasn't concluded yet, but yeah, the series that he's been updating, but
yeah, we got one more episode.
Trillman, we found out. I didn't like intentionally completely do it, but Trillman was broken as fuck.
Trillman was so broken.
God bless.
I also got an inordinate level of joy from singing "Breakfast at Tiffany's." I genuinely was thinking, I want to record a cover of "Breakfast at Tiffany's," where in the background, like one, it's going to be like a solemn cover. And I said, what about breakfast at Tiffany's? You said, I think it's super dramatic. And then, like, in the background, you can hear it a little bit in French.
Which, if anyone doesn't get the joke, he's just Truman Capote, the author. And I thought it was very funny for a 5'3 man to be a frenzied berserker.
It's hilarious.
It's really funny.
And he talks like this. He's just so soft, but he just has to slay him. He just has to kill them, burn them off with the Emperor.
Absolutely. MVP, deadliest member of our team by a mile.
By a mile. And he's just smoking with his cigarette with his extremely long filter.
Yeah.
Got the Cruella de Vil, you know, stick.
And so the song Breakfast at Tiffany's is about people people who should not be romantically together who have bonded over, like, well, at least we both enjoyed that movie, Breakfast at Tiffany's, based off of the book by Truman Capote. So, I couldn't stop myself from any time there's a dramatic scene, like, doing... I wanted to do a musical cue. Nasser, what about... And just, like, just imagining it as a heist movie, because the whole theme of that campaign was a heist movie, yeah. Where we got to do flashbacks... And
the scene where the wild card starts going buck wild, it just slowly fades in. Breakfast at Tiffany's, yeah. He begins to swing his axe and start murdering people.
That's great. I've been waiting the whole time.
Having a theme song for a D&D, any tabletop thing, wow. I might try to be shoehorning that in a bunch more times.
I'm telling you, man, music helps. Having at least, yeah, it helps add another layer of zaniness to what's going on.
It was very fun.
I
appreciated it a couple times we played it during combat.
Yeah.
And with that, we're going to end tonight's episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the nature of this content, go ahead and give us a like and subscribe on YouTube, and go ahead and give me a follow on Blue Sky, and support us on our Patreon. I'd also like to give a special thanks to our aspiring Magus Uncle Matty, and a super thanks to our fellow Scryers, Midnight Grimoire, Gary Goblino, The Greater Good Boy, Kina Majaro, and my mom.
Love you guys. Hope you guys enjoy playing D&D as well. Get onto the tabletops.
Bye. Yeah. Get on the tabletop with some friends and roll some dice. With that, have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.